Welcome back to the Avery Adventures podcast, powered by Mountain Ops.
Mountain Ops!
Today on our show, we have John Barklow. He is the big game product manager at Sitka, and he's going to go in depth and talk about the development of their new camo line, Subalpine, and their new women's line. Without further ado, John Barklow.
Welcome to the Avery Adventures podcast. I'm your host, Ryan Avery.
And I'm Tanya Avery.
We're still in Bozeman, and we're on number three, and I guess the best is last. We're here with John Barklow from Sitka. John, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys.
John, you are the big game
product manager.
Product manager, yeah, of Sitka. And if you have watched any or listened to any previous podcasts from Randy Newberg or Beyond the Kill, you know John's background, the rewarming drill, the whole military aspect that he brings to product development. And one of the questions we had, John, was in the rewarming drill. I don't want to go and rehash that. Those other podcasts covered it great. Was there any down tested in there, and how did it do?
Yeah, so no, there was no down. No. So, you know, I wanted to... There's a whole thing, and there'll be a whole bunch of stuff coming out in the next couple months, so... Mm-hmm. You know, everybody wanted the monkey to dance, so I danced. So that'll be coming out in the next couple of months. But no, there was no down. I'm a big believer in synthetics. That's the systems we build. At least in the next few years, you'll see there's a lot of synthetics, and there's a reason behind that. Just in my previous life, I had, you know, years, quite honestly, 15 years of nothing but just turned loose to try stuff, develop stuff. See if it failed, how it worked, et cetera. Had access to the people, just, you know, like you're talking to me, right, to ask them the questions. And just for my own individual testing, you know, down's great for certain things, but nothing is great for everything. So right. There's always a give and take. Anytime you use down and there's any moisture, so any kind of moist environment, you're doing a river trip, you know, you're out in the Pacific Northwest, you know, maybe Phoenix, maybe, you know, Mexico, but where there's no water. But other than that, if there's down, you risk getting moisture within the down, which makes the down clump, so to speak, right? Okay. It loses its loft, i.e. it loses its heat retention properties, and then it takes a long time to dry. And so it takes so much effort to not get your down wet, that to me, it's not worth it.
Gotcha.
You know, originally down was for, you know, high altitude climbers and mountaineers, where it's a very, you know, arid environment, very high altitude, right? So you don't really have to worry about that. It's so cold that, you know, everything freezes. But as hunters, you know, we're in these constantly changing environments, and I don't want to buy something that's just for Arizona if I'm going to go hunt in Montana in October, right? Or mm-hmm. go up to Alaska. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the other one is these treated downs. And, you know, I'll just speak from my personal experience. I've tried treated down. I've done rewarmings with all kinds of systems, not just the Sitka system, not just the system we developed for the military, but quite frankly, most of the competitors I've done this with already.
Okay.
And I won't speak to those results, but I will say that treated down works to a point. If you want to float it on your glass of water, it's it's fantastic, right? If you want to shake it up in the little tumbler, there's no issue. But I would say that from my personal testing, if I got in my bag with damp, not wet, like not jumping in the lake, but damp base layers, or I, you know, got caught in a thunderstorm and ran into my tent, bailed in and got in my sleeping bag, any kind of moisture that starts going through that treated down bag, anywhere it starts to be compressed, i.e. if I put an elbow down, right, if I sit on it, if I lay back, if I roll over on my side, that moisture and pressure will make those treated down feathers clump just like any other down, and it will take just as long to dry. So I'm a big proponent of synthetics because, quite frankly, you know, in some regard, they're idiot-proof. I can do anything I want and not have to worry about my system. I can worry about the hunting. So long story short, when I did that rewarming, and you'll see more of them, I use pure synthetics.
In your gear system, do you use any down or a time for down that you would say there is? There is a time for down, sorry?
There can be a time for down. So I'm not like this anti-down person. Right. I am anti-traditional down.
Gotcha.
I don't feel there's any place in a hunter system for traditional down. I do feel there's some places for treated down. But again, you know, if we're all gearheads, right? So yes. We like to have quivers of sleeping bags and jackets. Right. And so, yeah, there are places to do that.
I like the word quiver, though.
Yeah, but you know, a 12-day float trip in Alaska is probably not the place to be using, in my opinion, down or treated downs. Just because if they get wet, they can compromise your safety.
That makes sense. If you guys see me looking at my phone on the video, I'm not ignoring John. I'm looking at the questions you guys asked. So, all right, on down, just, you know, Patrick Smith, the owner of Kefaru?
Yeah.
This is his stance on down. Down is for ducks. And that's about all that he will say. He won't use any down products. So anyways, let's move on to, I'll go to the top two questions off the bat. Gore-Tex or breathability and waterproofness numbers. Mm-hmm. And then to add a caveat to that, what does it change with DWR on top of that? If you could give us I kind of threw that one in there because I didn't ask you that question beforehand. Yeah. But just give us the numbers because everybody touts numbers.
Right.
And what do they really mean? What do they mean after a year, after you've washed it, after you sweated in it, after you've, you know, it's been through hell and back? So can you kind of break it down for us?
That was an Avery Adventures ambush right there.
Yeah, no, that was a... Do you have the next 8 hours?
Well, I guess, yeah, just you do the best you can.
Yeah, right? No, so let me keep it high level. So, you know, there's various ways to measure moisture vapor transfer rate, MVTR, which is the one that Gore uses. That's a product we use. You know, that's how they measure breathability or moisture transfer through the laminate. Those numbers and the way those tests are set up, quite frankly, can be manipulated. And I'm not saying people do, but I'm saying they can be. You know, how far away from the heated plate? Do you use water? Do you use, you know, isopropyl alcohol? I mean, there's all kinds of ways. Are you just testing the laminate, or do you want to test the full package, which has the backer and the face fabric, i.e. the finished garment? Here at Sitka, we test finished garments. Okay. We don't feel there's any reason to test a laminate because nobody's going out and running around in the hunting woods with just a laminate on. So, so we test finished goods, and that's the number that we use when we, you know, publicize, so to speak, this garment, this laminate, this package, this jacket, this system breathes at this rate. Those are finished garments, and they are the what we feel to be the most useful numbers and useful tests for the actual perceived finished use. Right.
So the same package. So if they're buying an Optifade cold front jacket, that finished product is what you test.
That finished product is what we test. Okay. So the cold front jacket's a perfect example. The cold front jacket has a bonded LMC fleece on the inside. So there's an insulative layer of fleece. Well, that's going to slow things down as it moves through, right?
Gotcha.
But to test and promote otherwise would really be kind of false advertising.
I agree.
And so we don't feel that is, you know, the best use of a hunter's time to read a number and get all excited, and then have maybe a poor time in the field using that, going, man, I this thing didn't really perform to what they said it did. So, as far as DWRs are important to laminates. They, you know, DWR is durable water repellent, so people that don't know. And there's all kinds of different DWRs out there, and we think ours is a real good one that Gore has. But, you know, that's what makes the water bead up on the outside of the surface. And so when that water beads up on the outside of the surface and runs off, that's what everybody really enjoys, and that's going to promote that breathability, right? Mm-hmm. When that DWR starts to wear off, and it can wear off just from time, from going through a bunch of brush, and the actual face fabric starts to absorb water, that will actually slow down that breathability, right? And it's all about it's a temperature gradient. So, you know, your body is 98.6. Obviously, you have a garment on top, so you have a warm atmosphere, so to speak, inside there between the garment and your body. Depending on what the relative humidity is, right. Depending on what the temperature is, like everything wants to get a seek stasis, right? Seek equilibrium. And so if it's 98.6 inside the garment and 98.6 outside the garment, there's really no place for it to go.
Right.
But if it's 98.6 and negative 20, it's going to move through a lot quicker than, say, 98.6 and 40 above. And so by having that DWR, that helps keep that water off the face fabric. Once water starts to absorb on that face fabric, that will slow that down a little bit. One of the best things people can do with any kind of laminate is wash it. And I'm not going to tell you, I am literally the worst person. Like, so don't do as I do as I say, right? But not as I do. I quite frankly never wash them. And that's the worst thing you can do, because as dirt and grime gets ground in from the top, right, from the face fabric, that will start to degrade that DWR and work down into the laminate. And conversely, from the inside out, your body oils and how they touch the inside of that liner, which protect that laminate in the middle, the more, you know, you can keep that clean, the longer that garment will continue to function in its kind of full capacity, right? And so kind of a slob like myself who just puts it on and never washes it, that garment is going to start to degrade and lose its performance quicker than somebody who kind of stays on top of it, washes it properly, dries it properly, and continues to, you know, treat the DWR on the outside.
I would imagine that you're more the norm, because I don't wash anything either.
And that's the exact opposite of what you would think would happen. I mean, I think people try to not wash their stuff because I think it preserves it, you know, like the integrity of it by not getting beat up in a washing machine or a dryer. So that's interesting to hear you say that, because I would think the opposite.
Yeah, our garments are built, you know, really durable. There's, you know, washing them and drying them are not going to hurt them, you know, in any way.
How many washes?
But I guess I'm just lazy. I just don't,
I am too.
Just don't do it.
Can't even, like, that thing stinks. You need to wash it.
Yeah.
I'll wash it. But on the DWR, this is a question we get a lot, is how many times, how many washes before you put it back, before you reapply it? And what kind do you use?
Yeah, I wouldn't even know.
I don't know.
I know we have the number somewhere, but it's not something that I even.
Is there a brand you prefer to when you respray it back on?
I think Nick Wax is one that works. I think there's a few others that are kind of, you know, that Gore approved and things like that for their different laminates and DWRs. Again, I'm right. Do as I say, but I just run the garments hard until they wear out. And then I just get another one.
Up until this hunting season, 2016, I pretty much only ran First Light and Outdoor Research.
Uh-huh.
Pretty much is what I ran.
Yep.
And I got the pretty much kitted out midsummer, and I wore your Stormfront. Sorry, that's another brand. Stormfront a lot.
We're gonna edit that, like, part out.
I think I shot 8 animals, so I had to wash a lot because I got bloody.
Yeah.
Well, cause I hunted probably 80 days, and I probably had that jacket with me 70 of those days.
Mm-hmm.
And I noticed in December, I went out to hunt cats with Tanya over here in Montana, and it still was beating up. And it probably had 10, 15 washes, and it was still beating up just fine.
Yeah. So, well, like I said, the washing will actually prolong the life of that, right? It will actually make it work better. You know, one other thing I would say is, depending on the laminate package and, you know, whose laminate they're using, I've seen it where gun oils, I've seen it where insect repellent, especially DEET, I've seen it where sunscreen, those products have actually degraded the waterproofness of the garment almost immediately.
Wow.
So somebody will take a rifle and they'll throw it over their shoulder and say they got gun oil on the barrel or the action, and it will start to degrade immediately the breathability of that.
Never even thought about that. String wax, anything could probably do that.
Yeah, string wax, not so much, but any of those, I guess, real petroleum-based products. You know, we dealt with that. The reason I know that is we dealt a lot with that in the military, just the way people would carry their weapons would be across their chest somehow. And, you know, all of a sudden you'd have this big dark spot on the garment, and it would just water would pour through. Depending on the laminate, the company was making it. And, so you have to add, and we do, you have to add, other, treatment, so to speak, to protect from that, or really what's the point?
Right.
You know, we're hunters. We have gun oils around and sunscreens and insect repellents. So there's a lot of things. It's super complex. And, you know, we could do a 2-hour show and I'd have to bring in an engineer and a chemist and we could talk about it. I'd just sit here like a fool because they'd be talking over my head. But
me too.
But we try to do the right thing for the hunter, as best we can.
And I like you just put all the information out on the product because it seems like some companies want to hide some of the information. Your guys' weights, everything about it, technically the specs, everything is out there, which I appreciate.
Yeah, well, we're not trying to hide anything. And if we don't put something out, it's not because we are trying to hide it. It's that, you know, we either overlooked it or, but certainly if anybody calls customer service, they've got all those numbers and they're more than willing to share any and all of that.
All right. Moving on. The next question is, there's been some, rumors out there, accusations thrown around that you guys have a limit on the quality of products you can procure to test and develop. Can you talk a little bit about that?
So this is one that fires me up.
I can tell just by looking at you.
Blood pressure.
It fires me up to, yeah. No, I have no constraints put on me by the business to produce a product at any kind of price point. And I make this claim, and it sounds bold, and I kind of do it in jest a little bit, but I truly do mean it, in that there are products that me and our development team have developed that, quite frankly, the world isn't ready to see yet. And the reason I say that is because they're too expensive. It's beyond anything anybody would want to pay right now.
Right.
And to try to promote that and drive the value, there's like 7 people that would buy it right now. Mm-hmm.
Then they probably wouldn't be the ones that would use it.
Right.
they're at work.
Or I'd have Cole Kramer calling me and wanting a free one or something like that. He's a great friend. But no, the only expectation placed on us is that we build the best hunting product ever, right? That is the expectation on us. That's what keeps me up at night. That's what keeps the developers up at night. We have an absolute amazing design team. I mean, we have a guy right here in Bozeman, one of literally the best in the world. He's not only done this for 30 years as far as designing, but he can build anything. I can go over there right now and he can build me a Gore-Tex jacket that you would swear came off the production line. And so it's super cool to go over there and cobble together all these different things and see what we can come up with. But there's no expectation. There's no constraints on what we do. I might not bring something out at a certain point because maybe it is too expensive, but I am never going to cut back on the quality or the features if it needs to be there for that particular garment.
Gotcha.
That's absolutely, BS. I know what stuff costs. We have access. We literally have access to anything out there. I'm not going to say any names, but we have access to anything and everything any other competitor has.
If you listen to one of your, and I don't know which podcast it was, you said you had a fabric lady.
We do.
Literally.
I was talking to her today for 3 hours.
That's pretty awesome.
And what I do is I give her basically a textile brief, and I say, here's the concept of this garment, whatever it is. Here's the performance characteristics I'm looking for, weight, breathability, et cetera. And they're going to go to Asia for 2 to 3 weeks at the end of April, and they're going to scour, Asia to try to find what I need. But here's the thing. We'd go one step beyond that. So, I can't give you a percentage, but let's just say 50% of the time she comes back, they come back and they're like, hey, here's like 4, 5, 6, sometimes like a dozen different ideas. Do any of these work? And that's where I take those over to the designer and we start making test garments. But 50% of the time, we can't find what we need. I'm like, this isn't exactly what we're looking for. This is too loud. This is too light. This is too warm. This, whatever it is. And we send her back over there, and she works with these mills, and they will actually build a textile that's never existed before.
Really?
For us. So I have something coming out in fall 18, just to tease you. I have some stuff coming out in fall 18, and we did this, and there were all these textiles. I'm like, yeah, yes, maybe, maybe yes, you know, and we cobbled this thing together and we tried it. And at the end of the day, I was like, no, it's not. It's not exactly where I'd like it. We're on our third iteration and we finally hit it. And we basically built something from scratch for this end use. That's what we do here at Sitka.
So and nothing, basically, in a nutshell, is off limits. You can go find it.
Nothing is off
limits. Or have it made.
Nothing is off limits.
So on that same note, do they let's say Sitka, do they say you get halfway into a project, you have to finish it? And if you get halfway and you're like, this thing sucks, can you bail out on it?
Yeah, so rarely. Yeah, sometimes we'll say it sucks, but sometimes we'll say this needs more development. Okay. So we'll push projects. Gotcha. You know, our average development cycle from, you know, kind of inception of an idea to commercialization is 2 years, but some products take three, and I've got one product that's probably going to be pushed to 4 years.
Wow.
So, you know, if you're going to make great stuff, sometimes that's what it takes. And yeah, there are the rare occasions that we say, you know what, this isn't really what we want, and we just stop development. A lot of times, I'll speak for myself, it was really more of not having the idea fully baked in my mind when I went forward with it. And so that lack of direction sometimes, you know, can lead you astray. But if we're focused, we know what we want to do, you know, 2 to 3 years, generally speaking, we can get something accomplished.
So that pretty much just totally puts the bullshit to bed of Sitka not being able to procure products.
Yeah, quite frankly, if we can say that word, yeah, it's bullshit.
We can say whatever you want.
Yeah, no, it's bullshit. I mean, so let me take the Blizzard, for instance, the Blizzard, you know, jacket and bib. Mm-hmm. You know, who in their right mind would make a Gore-Tex insulated jacket that people can polar bear hunt in, muskox hunt in, right? If we were going to sit there and say, no, we're constrained by price, we're constrained by ingredients. We're not constrained by anything. The only thing we're constrained by is the ideas in our mind and what we can produce and the team we've got assembled. I mean, I would put the team we have here, our development team, against anybody in any mountain brand, Patagonia, Arc'teryx, any of them, right? I think we're not better, but I think we are on par. I think that's the kind of product we produce. And I think if we took the camo off the product we had and tried to compete with them on equal footing, I think we have a product that is built as well, equal to better ingredients and amazing design.
I agree. And that's one of the biggest things I push on Rockslide is buying from a hunting company that puts money back into conservation and is on our side.
Yeah.
And I that's why I said I wore outdoor research. I really don't. I pretty much only wear hunting companies,
right?
Because I think I want to put my money where my mouth is.
Yeah.
So
I've kind of gotten there in the last few years myself, quite frankly, with, you know, some of the companies I mentioned and some of their stances. You know, I can't support them anymore, you know, with my dollars.
And 10 years ago, there wasn't a company to go with in the hunting industry.
Yeah, no,
so
exactly.
Now there is. So people
start
spending your money.
Yeah. But now I get pretty fired up when people start, you know, calling me out on things they don't know. I mean, I'm not going to say our product is for everybody. You know, it's not. That's fine. I'm okay with that. But the product we put out, you know, I stand behind. I mean, I've tested it. I've hunted in it. You know, small little details keep us up at night. That's what we care about. That's what we do.
Well, that's good for the consumer, really.
Mm-hmm. I mean, ultimately, yes, it is.
Maybe not for your wealth or your health, sorry, but but for
I like to call my ulcer Henry. Sometimes Henry acts up. I don't really have an ulcer, but if I did, I'd call it Henry.
Well,
but,
you go out and test it. How many days would you say on the average you spend in the field yourself testing any one product?
Yeah, so, you know, just with the, you know, career I had in the military, you know, 15 years I was, you know, teaching special operations troops, and I was, you know, I was so fortunate to be able to help develop product, you know, not only clothing, but hard goods and, you know, tents and sleeping bags, packs, et cetera, with some of the best, you know, companies, outdoor companies out there. And so I'm a very hands-on person. Mm-hmm. You know, some people aren't, but I am. It's not that I don't trust other people, but I trust me more than anybody else, if that makes any sense. So,
absolutely.
So if I'm trying a product, I don't want to put it on, let's just say Cole Kramer again, I could never send him a product and have him take it up on a hunt with a paying client if I didn't have a belief that it would, you know, not compromise him, his safety, his hunter's success, right? So I have to test it first. And we do a lot of things here. I'll get to your answer here in a minute, but we do a lot of things here with our designer because he has his own shop. We do a lot of things called split garments.
We just heard that on a podcast.
Yeah, so for instance, you know, that the fabric lady comes back. Her name's Christina.
I was just going to ask you if we gave her a name.
Yeah, we'll call her Christina. She actually has a name. She's a wonderful lady. But so Christina comes back and she lays these textiles out. Now I pick, you know, say 2, 3, 4, whatever it is. We get some yardage. And then I'll go over to the shop and we have a basic pant and we have a basic jacket and a basic shirt build, right? So these are relatively, I mean, they're nice, but they're rudimentary. They don't have a lot of pockets and you know, bells and whistles on it. And we'll make split garments. And so you can see me or somebody else goofy enough walking around doing a hike at lunch. And I have one pant leg that's one color and one texture. And I have another pant leg that's this. And then I got a shirt that's split and this is purple. And because you never know the colors you're going to get of some of these textiles. And we do split garments. And I found a long time ago that this is the best way to start to determine what is going to work the best for whatever the use profile of this particular garment is. So, for instance, when we did the new Ascent pant coming out from 2017, you know, we had a bunch of different textiles I wanted to try. We made split pants, and then I would go out and hike. And, you know, your body physiology is the same that day. The environmental conditions are the same that day, right? The weight of the pack is the same that day. So everything is comparable.
Right.
And I go out and I say, is my left leg warmer than my right? Is my right leg dry out quicker than my left? You know, and you can directly compare and then you can down select and then get another split garment and say, okay, I like that. Let me try this. Put the next textile on the left leg and continue to do that. And so I do that and I'm a little anal, so I keep journals of everything I've done, like every arrow I've shot in the last 20 years and all this kind of stuff. So I can tell you with absolute certainty that I test anywhere on average between 180 to 200 days a year. I am out there directly testing product.
180 to 200 days a year.
200 days a year.
Are you single because of that?
I have a lovely wife I've been married to for 25 years. And she shakes her head. I'll give you a story. This last winter, it's negative 20 out. I come home. It's dark already. It's 5 o'clock. And, you know, obviously there's snow on the ground. It's Montana. And she comes out in the garage and she catches me red-handed. And I got a jacket. Yeah. I got a jacket that I'm sticking in a bucket of water, you know, and it's like this. And she catches me, you know, and I've been married to her so long anymore. She doesn't even ask. She just shakes her head, goes back in the house, right? I put the jacket on wet. I put the jacket on top of base layers, and I go out, you know, skiing, cross-country skiing to see how long it dries and this and that. She doesn't even.
I get that. I totally get that.
Has that jacket came to market?
Yeah, so that's the new Kelvin Active jacket.
I was going to ask you because I heard that. I think I heard that story from something else. Anyways, Kelvin Active. She has one, and she loves it.
Yeah
I was wearing it around. We were at the sheep show. I'm getting stopped by everybody like, whoa, what's that? What do you, you know? And I'm like, am I going to be safe with this on? Am I going to get like smacked in the back of the head and jacket torn off?
Yeah. So I have to do that. You know, I took my first vacation in 2 years because it took me a while to get this thing rolling, right? I've been here a little over 2 years now. And so my wife and I would go to Hawaii with some friends and I was testing gear every single day I was there, right? Because that's what I do. It's not like work to me. It's like, that's who I am. Like you, right?
Yeah.
The people that go on rock slide, like we're gearheads. Like
that's
what we do. I'm just a person who is fortunate enough to have the opportunity to do this and get paid for it. And so it's not work to me. It's who I am.
Yeah, I agree. And anybody that spends that much time, I want to be testing the gear before I even get a hold of it. Cause I am not that anal. I throw it on and I can tell if it doesn't work and that's about it.
Yeah.
So that's the kind of stuff I want to know before I buy something. So
yeah,
this is good.
It's a bit of a crusade of mine, and I use that word crusade on purpose, but it's a bit of a crusade of mine to like try to educate the hunting community as best I can. Like I'm not saying I know everything, but what I know, I would love to pass on to hunters, especially backcountry hunters who it really matters, like what they take and how it performs and how they use it and understand how they're used. Like it's really important to me to try to educate people so that, you know, you buy a Sitka system. So here's one of the analogies I use. So I give my I don't have kids, but let's just say I had a 16-year-old kid and I bought him a Porsche, right? And the kid doesn't know how to drive and all he can do is get it out of second gear, right?
Right.
And then I get in it and I'm like, no, kid, it's got six gears and it'll actually go 150 miles an hour.
Right.
That's what I feel like when I build these systems. We have gear that performs at 150 miles an hour. And if people don't know how to use it to that level, mm-hmm. like, what's the point? Like,
right.
I want you to get the full benefit out of it. And, you know, if it's for you and you want to take it to 150, that's great. And if you don't, that's great, but at least you know it can go there. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so that's, it's important to me.
And you guys do a great job of getting that information out, because no time in history has there been this instant information, nor the amount of information. But the problem with that is a lot of that information is wrong. Yeah. So you guys getting your product, getting out, getting it to the people that, you know, you guys do the testing with, getting with Rockside, getting with all the other hunting forums and stuff out there, a lot of information is getting fixed instantaneously. So if mm-hmm. somebody's spewing bullshit, it can be called on right now and fixed. So I think, so that crusade is a good crusade.
You know, I know one of the things we had talked about was, you know, what testing and it was something like, what's the difference between testing and wearing, or maybe that was something I had said to you, you know, mm-hmm. and I test. So I know what I want, you know, the textile to do, or the garment to do, or this particular garment within a system to do. And so I need to go out and test that. And so I purposely test it. And, you know, I know people are at some point are probably going to get sick and tired of hearing me talk about, you know, wetting down my garments. But I remember years ago when, you know, I would talk to these guides in Alaska and they're like, oh yeah, you know, me and my client, we spent 4 hours hiking to the top of a hill, a mountain. And got to the top, and the first thing we did, because our base layers are wet, are strip off our base layers and throw the wet base layer in the pack and put a new base layer on. And I'm like, why? All you have to do is put a synthetic or, you know, loft garment on, and in 15 minutes, it's going to cook your system dry, and you're not going to have to bring that extra base layer and strip down and expose yourself to the elements and all these kind of things. So managing moisture in any clothing system is it. Like, that's the crux. If you break it down, so it's moisture from the inside out, be it from your, you know, your sweat, or it's from the outside in, from any kind of environmental, right? Gotcha. Rain, snow, water.
See, I agree.
So it's important. So I test, and then once I test and know that it does what I want it to do, then I can give a finished garment to one of our other testers, and I can go, okay, now go put 30 days on this, you know, go run cats or go guide or do whatever. And I know that it's that at least it's going to perform the way I want. And now they can start to tell me about, does it fit right? You know, does it fit into the system? Are the hoods correct? You know, what is the durability after 30 days of sheep guiding? You know, those kind of things. But there's a big difference in just, you know, making something and testing it, right?
Absolutely.
I have one quick question on that.
Go ahead.
So it sounds like to me is what you're saying is you really get the clothing to people that you know are going to put it through a pretty rigorous testing also, because what I see from other companies is they're putting their clothing in the people's hands that I don't think really are going to be testing it to its fullest capability. So I have a lot of doubts. Yeah. Trusting what they're saying, because we all have seen the guys that, you know, the box of boots is behind them on the table and they pull it out of the box and they're like, these are the best thing ever. And you're like, you just pulled it out of the box. How would you know? And with women's clothing, which I think that we're probably going to start to segue to asking you questions about, is it sounds like you are very careful about vetting the people that you are having test the clothing before you're putting it in the consumer's hands.
Yeah, like I said, no, I don't trust anybody more than myself, but there are a few very select individuals that I utilize, at least for big game testing, that, you know, they're smart folks to begin with. I've helped to educate them in the way we do things if, you know, they haven't already known. I know that if I ask, you know, to get 30 days of use, that 31 days later, they'll come back with 30 days of use and they'll have it documented.
That's good
for me.
Stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, I've got a gentleman, right now down in Colorado, and he has got almost 120 days on a jacket in the last, well, I don't know, 6 months. He's got 120 days on this jacket.
That's a lot.
And every day's documented. He's, you know, kind of like me, but every day is documented. Like, those people are hard to find that, you know, can go out, actually do what I need them to do in, you know, in a fairly condensed time frame,
right,
and then trust the input that I get back from them. So there's not a lot of people, you know, our everybody thinks, oh, it's the athletes, and it's like, yeah, the athletes are great, but our athletes, they're going on high profile hunts and, mm-hmm, and going and doing filming, and I can't put them in front of a camera, right, wearing a test garment, and two, I can't compromise or hunt if something goes wrong. Mm-hmm. So the actual testing phase actually happens before they ever get anything,
right.
Right? So I can't tell you how many miserable, I mean, they're enjoyable in hindsight, right? But how many miserable nights I've spent, you know, out in the mountains because something didn't work right, or I couldn't get the system to function the way I wanted to, or I really got myself in a jam and I'm like, well, I got no choice now but to just gut this out.
Yeah.
Hopefully other people don't need to do that.
I appreciate that. I don't have to do that because you're doing that. Can I say that?
No, you can say that.
I'd rather you be miserable than me be miserable.
And there's different microclimates. Where I hunt 50% of the time is North Idaho, Northwest Montana. It's a shithole.
Yeah.
It's a brushy, wet. No matter if it rains or not, it's always damp.
Yeah.
So I've tested gear that people, oh, this is great gear. And I could tell in one day that nobody really vetted this in that particular area.
Correct.
Yeah. So then I was going to caveat to Becca Moffitt. Tested your women's line.
Yeah.
It was funny because I was up there Sitka deer hunting with her on Kodiak.
Okay, I didn't know that.
She's like, you can't video this. And I was like, oh, is that a women's line? She's like, yeah. So we had to take that part out of the video.
She is fantastic. So yes, I had her wearing it for two seasons, right? A whole spring season in Alaska and a whole fall season. I mean, she went on that flow trip with her husband, killed that brown bear. I think they went on a goat hunt. They did the blacktail hunt. I think a sheep hunt.
Like, yeah.
She was legit, but again, I couldn't put something on her and compromise her safety if I didn't know it worked.
Exactly.
Like, I knew it worked. It might not fit her well or any of those kind of things, but I knew that it was not going to fall apart on her, and she did a fantastic job.
Well, we're on that Sitka. I was like, how do you like it? And she's like, you know what? This is the best women's clothing that I've ever worn. And that was off the cuff. So
that was a tough one for me when we did that development because, you know, I like to joke with the women. I said, you know, what do you want? Because hopefully I never have to wear it. And they're like, what do you mean? I don't want to wear the woman's jacket. Like, if I'm making a woman's jacket to fit me, we're doing something wrong, you know? But I had already vetted the textiles and those kind of things in the system. So I knew it worked. Mm-hmm. Now we needed to build it in their form and the features that were important to you and, you know, and get the fit right was the biggest
thing. And quite honestly, there are women that hunt that are built more like you. He's just taller, stockier, but they don't need women's hunting clothing. Like it wouldn't fit them anyway. They've worn the men's clothing and it probably fits them a lot better. So like Becca and I had a total bitch session about the fact that neither one of us could find anything that fit. I mean, she has far more years than I do of experience with it, but it's super frustrating because she's really petite and, you know, she's like, I'm rolling things up and it's like, besides wearing kids clothing you guys made kids clothing. I don't know if you still do, but that worked pretty well. But you were one of the few people that even did that because most people don't want to spend that kind of money on their kids hunting stuff. And I don't blame them, but it's like, come on, if I'm going to be out there and I better not be cold because everybody's going to be wishing for death if I'm cold because I'm going to be bitching up a storm, huh, babe?
Yes.
Well, that's one of the things we learned is, you know, we brought in this, you know, consultant, this female who's been in the outdoor industry for 20 some years, came very highly regarded. And we brought her in, we just talked to her for a day. And she's done this with several companies, not in the hunting space. And so basically everything she laid out ended up coming to be true. And one of the things she said was, you know, fit has, you have to nail the fit. Like there's just no doubt about that. But the other one was that, you know, pay attention to what they're saying because women do get colder quicker than men. And so it was interesting because we'd go through this development process and every single time it came down to say, I can save a couple ounces for you here, or you can be a little warmer, they would always default to warmth. Even if it was just a little bit, they would always want to default to warmth.
Yes.
And it was not something that I would have built for myself, but it made sense to you. And that's what I think was so cool. And I guess it's a bit of a cliche, right, that it's, you know, designed by women, built by women. But it's true. And so things like the insides of collars being a soft brush tricot, which you and I would drive us crazy with beards – but you know, I don't know a lot of women with beards, so
I hope not to like, know.
So, so at least
those
not
women
sick,
will be
at least not sick,
clothing.
At least not sick of women hunters, but you know, it, but that is a real nice feature that,
right.
that you all wanted. And it's like, okay, I wouldn't have thought about that. That's what you wanted. Mm-hmm. So that's why it's there, you know, and those little things are,
it's, yeah, it definitely is. It's the little things like the, and I'm good. I just started learning about your clothing mm-hmm. line for women, so don't hit me real hard. But the one, I believe it's one of the base layer pieces that have the hood that, you know, you don't have to, it's got the little neck warmer type piece.
Yep.
The,
so,
like the neck gaiter built in.
Yep. It's called the Fanatic hoodie.
See, I was trying to learn all this stuff, but I
yeah.
knew that I'd screw something up.
Yeah.
Edit that part out later. but that part is awesome because it, I find that I get cold. If I get cold, like right here on my chest and stuff, I'm done. Mm-hmm. It sucks.
When she decided that she was going to start hunting 2 years ago, and she's like, "I'm going with you." The first thing I thought of was warmth because she's always cold.
Yeah.
And so that is a
yeah.
major factor
mm-hmm.
that I don't consider all the time because if I get cold, my fat ass can start walking again.
Yeah.
And I'm going to warm up. I got a
yep.
heater right here.
Yep. Exactly.
So if I do that with her, she could walk all day and she'll still tell me, "You know, I'm cold." So
yeah.
That is.
Yeah, well, there's certain things in the women's whitetail and big game line that, you know, the men don't have. And
right.
and maybe they will at some point, but, you know, the Fanatic jacket and bib in the whitetail line, we put this, you know, we call it Sitka ground shield. It's this aerogel foam in the back and the seat of the pants. So if I'm sitting on a cold tree stand, mm-hmm. right, and I'm losing all my heat through conductive heat loss, we've now insulated the bottom, you know, your bottom mm-hmm. from the tree stand, and then leaning against the tree, the same thing. It provides some padding, but it also provides insulation. And then
nice.
The women's Kelvin hoodie jacket, which is the big kind of loft piece,
mm-hmm.
you know, we put Windstopper in that. And so the reason is we knew it was warm, but the people we had using it for us, the women, they kept coming back and going, "It's not warm enough." Well, at a certain point, I can't continue to add loft.
Right.
So we're like, "Well, what are we doing wrong?" And it's like, "Well, air's getting through. So we need to kind of stop off that air." And so we applied a new Windstopper lining to that, which is not something the men have. And all of a sudden, it's like this hugely warm, popular piece, you know, mm-hmm. for glassing and riding a machine or a horse or in a boat or whatever it is. And yeah, they always defaulted to warmth.
Oh, without a doubt. I'm just thinking of this bear hunt that we have coming up, and we went on it last year and it was snowing, and well, it wasn't snowing, but there was snow still on the ground and it was freezing out. And I just was informed that we're going to be up there 5 days this year. And I'm not
it's a
very
backpack hunt, and she wasn't so it was really her first initial jump into backpack hunting. It wasn't a win, John. It wasn't a win for Ryan.
So now he tells me not only are we going to be gone for, I think it was only 2 or 3 days because we had our kid with us and he ate every single piece of food that we all three had.
Yes.
But now we're going to be gone for 5 days. And I'm like, I don't know how this is going to go.
It's just 2 days more.
Yeah, just 2 days more.
Right.
On getting on to that, the Gore Windstopper thing. Two things. I listened to one of your podcasts and I never, ever thought of it. You said that you try to keep that piece as close to your body as possible.
Mm-hmm.
And can you touch on that a little bit for this podcast?
Yeah. So I talked earlier when we were talking laminates about this temperature gradient.
Mm-hmm.
And I learned this from an alpine climber years ago, a guy named Mark Twite. But the greater that temperature gradient, right, the easier moisture is going to move through any kind of membrane. So be it Windstopper or a, you know, waterproof breathable like a Gore-Tex. And so if I wear that farther away from my body, so it's got to go through several layers of clothing and then gets to the Windstopper layer. Let's say I'm wearing it as an outer shell, right? Which I do, but not with a ton of clothes underneath.
Okay.
That air, that warm air, cools off as it continues to move through. And so when it hits the inside of that layer, the temperature gradient isn't as great to move through.
Gotcha.
If I wear that closer to my skin, where it's again 98.6, that's going to be the warmest it can be on the inside. It's going to move through as quick and efficiently as possible. And
okay.
So a lot of times, you know, like the last 2 years, we've had the mountain jacket, one of my favorite pieces, and this Kelvin active jacket we've been testing and wearing and hunting in. And a lot of times in the morning, say for September elk, I'll roll out and I'll have a lightweight base layer on. I'll have my mountain jacket on. And then I'll have the Kelvin Active jacket on top of that.
Okay.
And people are like, well, why are you doing that? Like, that's an insulative piece. You should have that underneath. And I said, well, two things. One, I know that I'm going to get the best breathability by wearing that laminate as close to my skin as possible. And second, as I move through and up the mountain, as the sun comes out and I start to warm up, I peel that off and now I've got my windstopper jacket on. So I still have that protection of the windstopper.
Okay.
But I don't have to take something off to put something on.
That makes
so
sense.
I build my system from the skin out, so to speak, right? So there's lots of things to take into consideration. I remember teaching that years ago, and it's not intuitive. We had a 7-layer system, and because it's the military, we numbered them 1 to 7, right? But they weren't
simple. Stupid.
But they weren't intended to be worn 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Right. And so that right. added confusion. We probably should have just, you know, gotten rid of that whole system. But it's like, no, a lot of times you would wear any kind of like windstopper layer closer to your skin and then apply a loft layer over top. So if you take it off, you don't have to take something off to put it back on.
That makes sense.
And you get better breathability.
Makes perfect sense.
So, but you're not telling people to put the flash hoodie on and no shirt.
No. So you have to. So that would be another example. I would go lightweight base layer. Potentially, you know, depending on how you build your system and just the events of how your day unfolds, flash pullover. And then if I needed insulation, instead of taking the flash pullover off to put the Kelvin Active jacket on, you put the Kelvin jacket right over top of it. And it's going to pull that moisture right through the system. Your base layer is going to dry so doggone quick. And everything's going to move through because that's the way it's truly built. And those are the kind of things that we need to keep educating and promoting, right? And part of what I think Sitka does the best and the thing that kind of fires me up the most is we build systems. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't want to build a jacket. I mean, yeah, I build a jacket, but anytime we talk about building a jacket, for instance, or somebody brings an idea for a jacket, the first thing in my mind I start thinking is, how does this integrate into one of our existing systems? Does it make it more efficient? Is this going to be a good thing for the hunter? And if not, and the jacket's so cool, can we build a system around it to help, you know, make this jacket a really great beneficial piece to that hunter? Mm-hmm. So I don't know. It's just a different way of thinking about things. But I've done it for so long, it's just the only way I can think about it anymore.
No, I think that's the great part about any kind of information, podcast, forum, wherever. I've hunted my whole life. I was in the military. I'd never, ever heard putting your puffy out and walking around. I mean, I've throw a puffy on when I stop the glass, but never in keeping that Gore windstopper or Gore-Tex piece close to your body. I've never heard that. So everybody can learn something.
Now you have.
Everybody can learn something. Getting on to the 17 stuff, you never seen a fat kid so excited to see a 7-ounce hoodie in your life when I saw that flash hoodie. Mm. Because I hate rain gear. I hate
7.8 ounce. I don't want to put out bad information.
Okay, 8 ounce. Let's go 8 ounce just and make people feel good when they actually weigh
in a size large. I have to put that out too. So
accuracy is the best policy. Well. But I hate rain gear.
Yeah.
I hate it. So I always skimp on it. And I live in a place where I shouldn't skimp on rain gear. But when I saw that, you asked Tanya, I got pretty excited. I was like, we got to do a video on this one. So how did that come to fruition from not having anything quite like that to having one? Is that all
so
John?
No, it wasn't me. This idea had been kicked around a few years before I got here, but we couldn't, quite frankly, we could not find the right textile. And, you know, they were either too breathable to where they'd let air out, but they let it in.
Right.
So that didn't work. Or they weren't compatible with like a gun oil, something like that. And so we had had a piece we developed when I was with the government that I was really just real fond of, and I had it, I took it with me, and which was fine. Nobody's going to come arrest me, but
you stole it.
And I said, "Man, like, look at this! Like, this is it." And they're like, "Oh, we've been trying to do that for years." And so we had Christina go and look and kind of come up with this textile, and you know. Really, once we saw it, we knew we had found what we wanted to. It's not 100% waterproof. It's not Gore-Tex, right? But it's highly water resistant. It's perfect for, well, it's called the flash for a reason. So how many times have we been out hunting in even the spring especially, but even in the fall, right? And a storm rolls over the top of the mountain that you hadn't seen, and it like starts to rain, it starts to snow. Maybe you didn't bring your rain gear. Maybe you did. A lot of times it lives at the bottom of our packs, right? We don't like go out of our way to hunt in inclement weather necessarily. With this flash pullover, there's no reason not to have it. Top pocket on your pack, cargo pocket on your pant, like minimalist, you know, not a lot of bells and whistles, but it does what it needs to do, right? And you can wear it. It breathes well. I mean, when we were testing that, I would go out in summer in the middle of the day, and it was, I had a black version before we printed it, and I would put the thing on, and I'd put a 40, 50, 60-pound pack on, depending on the day, and I would go hike, and people would look at me like I was an idiot. They're like, why in the world are you wearing a shell jacket when it's 85 degrees out at noon? And the reason was I wanted to see how well it breathed. I wanted to see what the durability was. I wanted to see how quickly when I took it off, my back dried. Because the pack obviously is not going to let your back breathe. Gotcha. Like, and we're like, yeah, this is it. Like, this is going to work. This is, you know, this is what we needed to do. So, but with that said, you know, it's not, you know, over time, you know, your, if you wear that with like a short sleeve shirt on, like that's definitely a piece you should wash, because if your oil from your skin gets on that backer, like over time, it's just going to degrade that backer, right? And kind of reduce the life of that garment. Like that is definitely one you should wash. So take my advice and wash it. I'm not going to wash mine, but.
Well, you dunk yours in
I wash mine
so
enough.
That's
true.
I swim in
rivers enough.
Did the police ever get called? There's a creepy guy walking with multicolored clothing on around the Bozeman area.
Like a clown escaped from the circus or something.
I look like a clown. It's a good thing I'm married, because I would definitely never get a date on the trail looking like I do. There's no doubt.
On that 2017 line, is there anything you want to highlight? The active jacket, Tanya loves it. I can't wait to actually get one. And is there anything else you want to highlight that was kind of your...
So the new Ascent Pan is pretty...
Yes.
I think it's a really nice piece. It's, you know, size large is a 12-ounce pant. One of the things we tried to do when we designed it is we tried not to stack two pieces of material on top of each other. So you'll notice all the pockets are mesh. Even the cargo pocket, when you open the cargo pocket is mesh, and it's not just mesh, it's printed mesh. Mm-hmm. So my point is, people are like, well, why don't you put vents on the sides? Well, if you open the cargo pockets, those are your vents.
Okay.
Now, obviously, you could put something in the cargo pocket and zip it up, right? But the hand pockets, because they're mesh, as you walk and you're moving, like you're pumping heat out the hand pockets.
Did that material change at all from last year? Is it a different material?
Oh, it's completely different.
Because it seems a lot lighter, like it'll dry really fast.
It's completely different. This is a Cordura nylon. So nylon's, you know, generally speaking, any nylon is really durable. And it's super durable for the weight. I got a test pair of pants that fit me that I made for me that I've been running around in just in a solid. And I sent them on 2 Cape Buffalo hunts this last summer. And I got them back the second hunt from my friend George, and I'm looking at them, and luckily he washed them. And I called him. I said, George, did you even wear these things? He's like, well, yeah. Didn't you see the picture of me wearing them when I killed that bull? I'm like, well, yeah, but they, like, there's nothing wrong. Like, I thought the brush over there would tear them up.
Right.
And he goes, no, bro. He says, I wore them for 10 days, and, you know, he said they,
that's awesome.
They just held up. But it also has mesh knee pad pockets. So, you know, a lot of us are out crawling after antelope or, you know, even elk or mule deer in the early season. So put a mesh knee pad pocket, don't even know it's there. So that's a real nice pant. And it's, you know, it's a lighter, I would say, improved version over what we had. And the Ascent pant's a very popular pant of ours. And then the other piece, just to not ramble on, because I'd talk about all 23 if you gave me time, but I'm really proud of this Ascent vest. And I like to challenge people sometimes and their thinking, right? And so the background on the Ascent vest was, obviously, coming from the military and training all these guys, like, you carry a lot of gear on the front of your chest. Like, that's the only real estate you have if you have a pack on your back. And so I would go out and hunt in Alaska, and I'm like, man, I really like that concept, but obviously I don't need to carry all those bullets and all that.
Right.
So I started with a Primos vest, and then I didn't like the Primos vest because it was cotton. Nothing against a Primos vest in itself. And then I moved to a fly fishing vest because you could get that wet. It would dry. It had lots of pockets. Right. And then I took all the pockets off and I had my wife sew a bunch of different stuff back on. So this was like this slow roll of 5 or 6 years that I've been kind of trying to develop this thing. So anyways, we came up with the Ascent vest, which is basically a hybrid between a fly fishing vest, an ultra running vest, and a hunting vest. And the thought process behind it is that I can take this vest and I can outfit it. I can customize it to any hunt or any environment. So if I'm hunting in bear country, I can literally carry my bear spray right here in the bottom left pocket. Mm-hmm. I can carry my diaphragm calls. I can carry my GPS. I can carry my release. I can carry, whatever I need, what I feel is important for me on that particular hunt. And I grab it, I put it on. How many times, and this, I've had to learn this. We're all learning this. How many times you've been on a hunt and you go on a stalk, you drop your pack and you're like, I'm only going to go 200 yards. I'll come right back to the pack. And you get up there and you're like, shit, I don't have my wind check. Or 4 hours later and 2 miles down the ridge, you're like, shit, I don't have my GPS. Where is my pack?
Have you been hunting with us?
Right? Shit, where is my pack?
Or I always carry a spare release, right? Or, oh my God, my release fell off. And you're constantly doing this, like, where did I put my rangefinder? My rangefinder always goes in my bottom right pocket, and it's tethered in. I reach down. I'm getting close. I'm getting in the red zone. I open it. I push the little wire open. It's there. I range. I can drop it. I range. I can drop it in the pocket. It's always there. I'm not like, getting within that 50 yards and going, damn it, I left my release, in the pocket of my backpack. And so, I want to challenge people. Instead of hanging a bunch of extra pockets off our bino harnesses, maybe we just need to think about it a little different. And so the vest was my solution. I integrated it and built it with the bino bivy in mind that we updated. So you put the bino bivy on. We took a lot out of the harnessing to make it really lightweight. You put the bino bivy on, or just your binos in general. You put the vest over top. And then there's two straps on the front of the vest, and they actually lock the bino bivy in place. So now I can crawl and the bino bivy stays to my chest, mm-hmm. or I can jog or run if I need to, and it doesn't flop around. It like locks it in place. And I've really come to appreciate that. Anyways, it's just, it's a cool thing. I'm really pleased at the response I've gotten from like the athletes and some mm-hmm. of our ambassadors, some people that got to hunting at this last fall. And it'll be fun to see like what people do with it and where they take it. So
how will it work with any other bino harness?
No problem. Yeah. Because those straps will slide on a rail, so you can adjust them any way you want.
With like out of bino harness, how will it do like in the prone? If you're like shooting in the prone, jump down. Any of that? Have you tried any of that? Shooting in the prone with that? Does any of that shit get in the way?
It would be just like wearing any other binos on your chest.
I guess I didn't look at that thing where I heard. I got to take a look at it.
Is that available in the women's line too?
It's a men's product. I mean, theoretically, it's a unisex, so it's a one size fits most. We tried it on the smallest guy at the company, and then we tried it on myself.
If it fits David, it'll fit you just fine.
Yeah. I don't want to say smaller than David, but the guy was smaller than David. But
because I hate having to put everything that I'm trying to not forget in that bino pouch. Because for one, I hate bino pouches. If you've ever seen pictures Aaron Snyder is always taking, I'm like tangled up in my bino harness on one hunt that we're at. But I would so much rather have a vest because I do like walk to organize in pockets. And then it's not like so heavy, like hanging on.
I would tell you just in my mind as you're thinking about that, if I was going to build a woman's specific vest, I would probably move some pockets around just because of
got those boobs in the way.
Is that what you're trying to do?
Thank you. I was like, oh my God, they got me. I'm gonna say it.
Well, Ryan's always like, he does a really good job of outfitting me in stuff that he thinks is gonna work for me, but he doesn't always have everything in mind, so he brings me this bino pouch and it's sticking out here. Not that I'm even busty. And I'm like, son of a bitch, come on. Like, let's think this through.
Yeah, I don't think about that stuff as much.
You got to work around the
curves.
You got to work around the curves. But, the other thing is just real quick is, everybody said, you know, people ask, well, does it work with a pack? And I'm like, yes. And you know, I'm a pretty just downer, simple guy. And when we was trying to figure this out, put a t-shirt on, put a vinyl harness on, put a backpack on. And then with a black magic marker, we just traced around everything and pulled the t-shirt off and said, that's the real estate we have to work with. What can we do with it? So
that's like a redneck geomap,
right?
I'd love to see that version.
Everybody's
of the
like,
women's
oh
line.
No, he pulled out Illustrator, took a digital picture and AutoCAD, brought NASA in. It's like, nah, I just traced it on my
just
t-shirt.
Traced it on my t-shirt. That's awesome. No, I did not. I guess I saw it sitting on the mannequin. And my mind didn't even think that way, but I'll definitely go back and look at it.
Yeah.
Now.
So, anyways, I'm, you know, that's a fun one. Pretty proud of that. So,
yeah.
This wasn't on your cheat sheet that I sent you your questions, but I always
Here
this
the
too.
Ambush.
Is what's the difference? I always hear that Windstopper is the same thing as Gore-Tex; it just isn't taped. Is that true?
No, that's not true.
It's a totally different kind of fabric.
It's a totally different kind of laminate.
Laminate.
So, for instance, we have taped Windstopper in the Mountain and Timberline jackets, and all Gore-Tex is taped because obviously, you don't want to let water in. The reason we tape Windstopper on certain garments, I mean, it costs more, but it makes a more refined finished look that the seams are cleaner and less bulky. But I liken it to chinking the logs in a cabin. So any place you have two seams come together, you could over time get wind come through. Well, the best way to solve that is you just tape the seams.
Gotcha.
But no, they're totally different.
Good to know. Cause that's
no, they're
always
totally different
up.
Laminates.
And I would say 80% of the people would say it's the same thing. So I'm glad you clarified that.
Yeah, no, it's not.
On the, soft shell jackets, and this is a debated about question. Too, you guys make 3 soft shell jackets, 4, I think.
Yeah.
Do you need one, or can you go with a puffy and a shell? Why do you need that soft shell jacket? I guess, and people always debate that.
Yeah, I'm a huge proponent of soft shell jackets, and it's funny because I get this a lot. You know, my friends even ask me, and I've always been a proponent of it. And so, you know, to go back to Windstopper is absolutely worth its weight in gold to me in any kind of hunting application. If you can cut the wind and limit or stop convective heat loss, you are going to be able to stay in the field longer and have, you know, pay attention and have better success just because you're there longer. So, you could say, well, I'll just wear my Gore-Tex jacket. Well, Windstopper breathes better than Gore-Tex, right? So there's one.
Okay.
A lot of times, at least our Windstopper jackets, they're a lot quieter than most of our Gore-Tex. So that's 2. The third is it's a lighter package, and I can wear it depending on what I have. Like I wear my mountain jacket probably 75-80% of the time. So it provides me camouflage. It provides me protection. It provides protection from the elements like rocks and scraping up against trees and things like that, but also from the elements, right? So light rain, because it's got a DWR. So light rain, light snow, obviously wind. So all those things. Now, if you were to ask me, does a soft shell jacket without Windstopper have a lot of merit? I would say probably not, in my opinion.
Okay.
I like a soft shell jacket, and people can argue, well, a jacket with Windstopper isn't soft shell, but by my estimation, it is. A jacket with Windstopper, a soft shell jacket, not a true hard shell rain layer, to me is one of the most overlooked things in somebody's system. And it's one that I roll with. You know, the mountain jacket is one of my favorite pieces in the Sitka line. Obviously, the Kelvin Active would be another that's coming out, right? But that mountain jacket goes with me everywhere. I wear it all the time. It's got a huge, broad comfort range. It keeps me warm. It cuts down on, you know, convective heat loss. Like, it's huge. Now, you know, certain people don't want to spend the money to buy that jacket, you know.
Right.
That you know, that's up to them. You know, how they build their system, how they hunt, what their physiology is, what environment they hunt in. Like, there's so many things. But to me, it's one of the most overlooked pieces in somebody's hunting system.
On my opinion, the only piece of Sitka that I'd had long-term multiple years is a Jetstream jacket.
Jetstream jacket is a hugely popular jacket, even 7 or 8 years into its service life.
I wore it, and mine was a non-camo, and it just great.
So Jetstream jacket for me is one of my go-to pieces for spring bear hunting. So it's warm, it's quiet, it's windproof, and it blocks some of the rain and snow that you get intermittently when you're, you know, a lot of times bear hunting in the spring around here. I love that piece, and I can take it off and I can roll without it and I can throw it right back on, and I have everything I need, right? It provides me the level of protection I'm looking for, you know, in what I consider a soft shell garment. So, you know, it's funny that it gets batted around, you know, we had a jacket a couple years ago that didn't have windstopper in it. There was a soft shell jacket, and I actually, you know, before I worked for the company, I bought one, and mm-hmm. and I'm like, I don't know if I see the value in this, right? But all of a sudden, you add windstopper to that, and now to me, it becomes almost
like totally different.
It's a totally different animal, right? All of a sudden, it becomes like my go-to piece. So,
well, that clears that up.
These are all my opinions, of course, right? People can disagree, and that's what I love about it, like the debate. But that's by my experience. That's how I feel about it.
Yeah, but I mean, it's an opinion based on fact. You know, based on facts. You had them without. You've had them with. That's your factual.
Yeah. So to give you an idea, when I, I've got this thing coming out. I won't say with who, but I got this thing. We got this rewarming thing coming out pretty soon. That I'm really excited about, and I hope it really drives a great conversation. Hopefully not an argument, but hopefully a good conversation, even debate. But you know, the system I was wearing at the time that I did this mm-hmm. was on my upper body was lightweight base layer, long sleeve base layer, Kelvin active jacket, and my mountain jacket. And then eventually, you know, I ended up getting in my tent and drying out, and just water, moisture, everything just moved out. Just moved right through. But that same day that I did that, it's been a little while, so don't quote me, but it was, I don't know, 29, 30 degrees outside, wind was blowing 20 to 40 miles an hour. Like, what are you going to have on? Like, I don't want to roll in my rain jacket.
Yeah.
Had that mountain jacket on, man, I was fine. I was out hunting, stalking around, and happened to stumble and fall in a slushy, icy river and got out and dried myself out. So
that's interesting. I do like the way you guys preach that system, because people going through and cherry picking might not get the best results if they don't think about the system.
Yeah. I mean, we build systems, and you don't have to buy, you know, I mean, I'd love for you to buy a full mountain right. system the way I kind of intended in my mind it to be worn. But the reality is if you stick to, let's just say, the Sitka system, if you stick to the Sitka system mm-hmm. and you know, everybody's different. Everybody's physiology, like we said, and environments and how they hunt, and everything's different. But if you piece together your system, nobody can tell you it's wrong if it works for you.
Right.
So if you have the knowledge and you put this together intelligently and you build it and it works for you, that's great. The only thing I tell people, the only one rule that you should not break is do not incorporate cotton any system.
That was my come in with.
I'm sorry, but if you do that, like you will completely negate it. And a lot of times people are smart enough to know that, except for one thing, their underwear, their briefs, right? Yeah, their gotcha. Boxers or their briefs. And they're like, oh, well, I'm rolling around with Fruit of the Looms. And I'm like, you need to take those off. Like, you either need to roll commando. Or you need to, you know, you need to put a merino or a synthetic boxer or a brief on. And that's the one place I feel I find people get tripped up a little bit, right?
Yeah, I saw a guy with a really expensive jacket on from another company, really expensive shirt, and he had on a cotton shirt. And I was like,
yeah.
I don't know if you spent your money the wisely.
Well, on occasion I'll see, and a lot of times it's I won't mention the hunting discipline, but I see him wear a lot of cotton hoodies. Mm-hmm. And it's like, listen, you got a $500 shell on and you got a cotton hoodie underneath. Brother, like, help me
it's
out.
It's like, it just, people just don't think about it.
Right.
Especially like the underwear. It just, you know, it's like, well, what would that matter?
And I want them to think about it, right?
Yeah,
I want them to think literally skin out, right?
Yeah.
So again, the Porsche analogy. Got a great Porsche and you got worn down tires.
Mm-hmm.
It's like,
yep.
Put some tires on. Like, it's got to be built from the base out, mm-hmm. from the skin out, right?
Yeah, and it's I think a lot of that's, you know, my dad wore blue jeans and white long johns. Why can't I? So I think a lot of that.
No, it works. So argument. Here's the deal, because I get this all the time as well. And the reality is a couple things, right? So they didn't know what they didn't know.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So at the time, that's the best they had. And, you know, after World War II and that wool started to come out of the mm-hmm. out of the European theater, and then North Korea, Korea started to come out of there, people started wearing wool, right? But I want to go out there and have the most enjoyable experience. And to me, that's success, right? However you define success, either with an animal or having an enjoyable experience or not having to suffer unduly and coming out of the mountains. I want to come out of the mountains when I'm ready, not when the weather drives me out, right? And when I used to teach to the guys in the government, they didn't have the luxury of coming out of the mountains when they wanted to. Right. They were there until they were told to leave, right? And so you had to build an uncompromising system. And yeah, they could wear long underwear, cotton, and they could wear jeans and all that, but did they have as nice of an experience? Did they leave a lot of times because the weather drove them out? Or could they just sit there in a storm and just laugh and joke and play cards in the tent and wait it out and go out there and hunt some more, right?
Well, that's a silly analogy, because really it's like, well, your dad had a black and white TV. Do you have a black and white TV? Yeah. He can still see the show.
Yeah.
It's you like, know, it's like, yeah. Think about
it's like,
that
yeah,
a little
you can
bit.
Get away with it, but why? It's like, I say that in the teaser. It's easy to be hard. It's hard to be smart. You know?
Yeah, it is.
It's like, I know a lot of tough dudes, but it's like you got to couple that with some intelligence, and now you really are dangerous, right?
Yeah, and I agree. I want to come out on my terms, and the things I can control going into it, I want to be able to control.
I want to control everyone I can, because there's a lot that I can't.
Absolutely.
And it is about the experience. If somebody only has 7 days out of that year to go hunt, are they going to want to leave 2 days out because, or 2 days in because they are freezing their butt off after
right.
they took vacation time, organized things with the wife, had to do a honey-do list a mile long just to get out of the house? No, I mean, that's...
Yeah, you go on your one elk hunt of the year
right.
in Colorado, and you're coming from Pennsylvania, mm-hmm. and it rains 7 days, and you don't get out of your tent because mm-hmm. you don't have the proper gear. It's like, no, if you have the proper gear, you go hunt, you come back, you dry it out, and you go hunt again.
Yeah.
And chances are you're going to have a great experience.
I agree. All right, last couple questions.
Oh, do you want me to turn this thing on to see if anyone has any questions on Instagram?
Don't sit on there. You're going to be live for a minute, so don't say anything crazy. On the Merino, this is one of your questions I gave you. So Merino, synthetic, blended.
Yeah.
What's your thoughts on all of that?
So I've said this before in another podcast, but talking about Merino wool is like talking politics or religion at a cocktail party,
really is.
Right? It's just like not recommended, but you queued it up. So people may get the impression that I'm anti-Merino, and I'm not.
Mm-hmm.
I am pro-synthetic, but I'm not anti-Merino, if that makes any sense. And I think there's great cases to wear one or the other, or even both at some points, right? So a lot of times I'll roll synthetic base layers and then maybe a thicker wool over top of that. But I want to pull that moisture away from my skin. I've found that whatever clothing is directly contacting my skin, if that's dry, then I'm dry and warm, right? And so if any other layer is wet, I don't care. The one thing people will tell you about Merino is it's warm when it's wet. And I'll come back and say, yeah, but it's wet. And I'd rather be dry. But I think whitetail hunting is a perfect application for Merino. Mm-hmm. I think the natural antimicrobials of Merino are a great reason for people to wear it on long backpack hunts. But I think nowadays, with all that said, I think nowadays these blends are really cool, where right. they're taking polyester or nylon and they're blending it with Merino wool, and they're doing it in different ways where the Merino can contact your skin and the poly's on the outside, say for durability, or we put the poly on the inside to wick the moisture, but the wool's on the outside to say keep it quiet and cut down on some of the odor. So I think really the future is these hybrids of Merino and synthetics, and we're playing around with them.
I was just gonna ask.
No, we're playing around with them, and we've got some really cool things we're working on. But that's where I think the future is. There's a blending of the two. It's kind of like, you know, where I said traditional down doesn't really, in my opinion, have a place in in hunting. I'm almost to the point now where I don't know if pure merino anymore for big game hunting, if there's a place because of these really cool synthetic blend or merino synthetic blends that they're coming out with.
Yeah.
So
last year I ran the Arrow Wool from First Light.
Yeah.
And it merino, I tear where I hunt. I just tear merino up.
Yeah.
And that stuff is phenomenally tougher than merino.
First Light does a fantastic job with their merino, right? Yeah, everybody thinks we're all competitors, but we love those guys. We get along with those guys great. They do a great merino product or merino blend, and
Kenton's a really good guy.
Yeah, there's some things you can do to really, take the best properties of one and blend it with the other, and people have been doing it now for a couple years, mm-hmm. but it'll continue. I think you'll see some really neat stuff.
And I'm sure Sitka will be part of that.
Hopefully, yeah.
And I want to bring this up, and it's, I know the polygene, right? Is that how you say it?
Polygene? Yes, polygene.
Polygene, I see all the rave reviews about it. For me, it's I stink in it. Mm-hmm. Do you know any reason why? Just body chemistry?
I've heard that from some people, and again, not knowing fully, kind of having been there and walked you through it, I've found that... So it kills the bacteria that produces odor, right? Mm-hmm. And I always use these analogies. So my little analogy, right, wrong, or indifferent, is like little Pac-Men. Like, and the little Pac-Men go around and they eat all the odor causing bacteria. And if you sweat a lot,
I do,
right? If you sweat a lot, the Pac-Men can only eat quick enough, mm-hmm. so fast, and so you can overwhelm the system, but and I'll just speak, from my experiences, what I've done is, I took a shirt, I wear it, I work out in it, I come home, I just throw it in a corner, of the garage. My wife doesn't like
far away from the house.
Yeah. And I've done that for 2 weeks straight.
Okay.
And I'll bring it back and I'll be like, man, this thing stinks. Like not really bad, like some of the old Capoline stuff, but mm-hmm. it stinks. And I throw it in the corner and I come back the next day and it doesn't stink anymore, or it stinks very little.
Gotcha.
Well, the thing is, because I've taken it off, I'm not producing any more of that bacteria. The Pac-Man had time to kind of consume it all. Right. So I'm not saying there's not a body chemistry thing, but mm-hmm. I'm saying, and I've heard that, but I'm saying that I know that if people stop the sweating process and, you don't have to take it off, but if you stop producing the bacteria and give it time that they can catch up and consume it, does it work for everybody? I really don't know.
It's very, very warm stuff. That all three of those levels of thickness are super warm.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the UA stuff, I can't wear that for 3 hours and I stink to holy hell.
Yeah.
So your stuff, your guys' stuff is better, but I still stink. And I was like,
so do you wear wool then?
Merino?
Yeah.
I wear the Arrow wool and I wore a blended from another company. And then I wore most of your stuff, the polygene stuff last year, and the heavyweight and the midweight. And it didn't blow me out, but I noticed that.
Yeah. So maybe for you, that's just a better alternative for you and your body chemistry and the way you hunt and the way
you. I'm a fat kid, John. I sweat a lot. And I sweat like a faucet. I get faucets coming out. So I think that may be part of the problem. But if you look at the reviews on that stuff, people love it.
Yeah, it will, it'll never be as good as Mother Nature, right? So it'll never be as good as like the natural antimicrobial properties of wool, but it's a pretty good swing at it. The other thing is, we get this a lot is, somebody says, well, it doesn't kill the odor. And I'm like, well, what odor are you talking about? And they're like, well, I had a double a Big Mac before I went to the tree stand, and I still smelled like a Big Mac. And I'm like, that's because polygene only eats the bacteria that causes odor. It doesn't kill gas smells. It doesn't kill cheeseburger smells. Mm-hmm. It doesn't kill any of those smells. It's only what the bacteria that you're producing that it kills. So it's not like this, scent lock charcoal thing or anything like that. It's only for body odor. But it does. It works. We're pretty pleased with how it's working so far.
It dries very quickly.
It dries very quickly, which is one of the things that I look for in a base layer.
Gotcha. The last two questions are kind of combined. So now that you have the Subalpine camo and the Subalpine line, mm-hmm. and this was from Tips and Tells, was a guy on Rockside that asked a question. Are you going to focus have more, you know, focused pieces on Alpine products, Alpine gear.
Yes.
Can you elaborate at all?
No.
No.
So yeah, there's no intention to get rid of Open Country. Really, what Subalpine was is, you know, I wanted a pattern that complemented Open Country, and allowed people to, you know, pick a pattern that worked where they hunted, how they hunted, and I didn't think one pattern could rule them all necessarily, especially when you consider big game hunting as a worldwide pursuit. So Subalpine complements Open Country. Okay. In a bunch of different ways. I have no intention of getting rid of it. I do intend to come out with products that are only going to be offered in Subalpine, kind of built for that use profile, so to speak. And there will be products that come out that will only be in Open Country that will be built for those kind of pursuits, the sheep and goat guys, the people going above timberline. And so, you know, more to come on that. You'll have to wait. But that is my intent right now for sure. Okay. Yep. I will show equal love, if that makes any sense.
And you're going to continue to develop the women's line, more products, more pieces?
Yeah, we're absolutely. We had a meeting today. We're going to continue to build out the women's line.
Yay!
More product, maybe offer it in a few more categories, but absolutely continue to build it out. The response has been absolutely off the chart. I mean, I always hoped it would be good, but you never know. And the response coming off the trade shows and consumer shows, you know, we've all been hanging out. And then we've done a pre-order now for the last, since the 15th, so 9 days now. And it's just been fantastic. The response we've gotten in.
Are you going to sell out? Do people need to get their shit together and get their orders in?
I would say women need to order their gear probably before June.
All right.
So our friend, not to backtrack, but I'm going to backtrack because I didn't want to interrupt you guys, but TJ, outdoorsman TJ, I'm shouting you out here. He's in Arizona and he's super excited about the Subalpine because the camo pattern is perfect for the area that he's hunting in. So he is on here.
Yeah, I hunted with Greg Krogh and Adam Foss 2 Januaries ago from Mule Deer down in Arizona. And Greg didn't know at the time that we were even doing another pattern. And so we're sitting there glassing, and Greg falls asleep on this glassing knob, you know. And I had this cover suit, so I put the Subalpine cover suit on, and I slip out 50 yards, and I'm just sitting down glassing with my back to Greg. He wakes up, and he's asking Adam, hey, where's John? Where's John? He's like, he's right there. You know, and he doesn't know what he's looking at. He's like, where? And he's like, dude, he's right there. And Greg's like, and I stand up, I wave like this, and he goes, oh my God. He goes, that's it. That's the new pattern. Like, oh my God, this is like the pattern I need. And it's crazy. You can take it from the desert southwest to the darkest timber patch in Montana, right, after elk. And it's amazing the diversity of that pattern and how it works in vegetated and broken terrain. It really works well.
Well, that video that we went to that breakfast at Shot, you guys talked about how you couldn't even photograph it because it was messing with the camera because the camera wouldn't detect
it. Focus on it.
Focus on it. So that's what really impressed me.
Yeah, well, that's when we knew we were onto something. So like you guys have heard me say, but, you know, this was the most extensive development of a pattern that Sitka's done. And just because that's the way I am, right? But 37 iterations to get to where we landed. And to the point where, you know, the printer was starting to get a little irritated at me. The operations people were starting to get a little irritated at me, you know. I was starting to get a little irritated at me, but I knew we were really close. We would do 3 at a time, and we'd get them made into these little cover suits, and then I'd put them on, and we'd go out to the elk country. Mm-hmm. And I would stand in front of things, not behind, not trying to hide. I'd stand in front of things, and I wanted every picture taken within 50 yards. And when we finally got down to the version we settled on, we called Subalpine, I'm standing there, and there's some shadows cast across me, but I'm standing there, and the photographer is like, he goes, dude, I can't focus on you. He says, when I look at you, what I think is you through the viewfinder, you blend in so well that I can't get a crisp focus. That's awesome. What we had to do is we had to have, you know, we had David out there. And so he would stand in front of me just wearing kind of regular clothes. focus on him, he would step out of frame, and then they'd take the picture.
Wow.
And that's when we knew we were onto something.
Right.
Yeah, so, yeah, pretty excited about that. But, yeah, really, really broad use profile. You had a lot of great response from the Western guys, right, up in the Pacific Northwest, but people up in Maine, right? Mm-hmm. Those kind of folks, Pennsylvania, that are really excited about it. So
I like where I live. There's lots of green.
Yeah,
and I don't even though it may not make sense. I just like to think that I blend in.
Just other women's quote unquote hunting lines that shrink in pink. You know, mm-hmm. It's like they and so when I saw the people that were testing your guys' product lines out, I was excited because those were actual real women hunters like Becca Moffitt. And like people I know are really going out and doing the things that they say they're doing. They're not just posting up pictures of themselves in the woods, you know, like 100 selfies a month.
Yeah.
So I was super excited about that because I even not testing it myself, if Becca says, hey, this works, I'm going to believe her. I know she's not going to lie. And I know that she's put it through the testing far more than I'm going to ever do probably.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, it was interesting because, you know, so the women we used, you know, I didn't take it lightly, and I wanted female hunters from kind of every demographic, right? So we had one gal who was 20 years old at the time, and we had one lady who I believe was like 50 or 52, something mm-hmm. like that, and everybody in between, and they all hunted different, and they all hunted different species, but they were all pretty hardcore Western hunters, and but the problem was that a lot of these women, they either hunt by themselves or that, you know, they hunt right. with one other person. And they don't want you following them around because they've got their little honey holes. And
right,
it's like
right.
this one gal, Amanda, I'm like, hey, Amanda, like we want to send a photographer and see what you're doing. She was like, really, she was very cautious, shall we say, because she saddles up her 3-4 horses and she'll pack 20 miles into the backcountry, go elk hunt by herself in grizzly
wow.
country, and she didn't want to take anybody else
That's
back there.
Awesome.
And it's like,
she's a tough chick.
I appreciate that, but can we, you know, if I get this guy to, like, you know, pinky swear that he won't even tell me your GPS coordinates, and, you know, but so it was a challenge because they're hunters. Like, they
right,
don't want
right.
to, they're just like all of us. Right. I don't want to tell you where I'm picking up sheds. I don't want to tell you where I'm killing bulls, you know?
I totally understand
so,
that.
But it was a really cool process.
Yeah.
Really cool process.
All right. So I lied. One more question. I hear, you know, you self-admittedly anal. I hear you filled strip Mountain House Mills. Can you
yeah.
tell me a little bit about that?
Wait, what?
He yeah. filled strips. Means he breaks it down to the smallest possible package.
Oh, gotcha.
So again, this is... This kind of came from two different angles. One, from the kind of prepackaged military meals,
right.
the MREs, and then this alpine climber friend of ours, Mark, who was, you know, trying to, like, literally an ounce counter. But, you know, essentially, if you take and try it sometime, but, you know, take a Mountain House meal in its packaging
mm-hmm.
and try to roll it up as small as possible mm-hmm. and do two or three of those. And then take my method and compare them.
Okay.
And see what takes up more volume in your pack,
uh-huh.
and then what is going to pack more nutritional punch, right? And I love Mountain House. I use them all the time, and there's a bunch of other great ones out there. But what I do is I take a real quality Ziploc bag. They're PBA free. I've looked into this, and I take the Mountain House.
I've looked into it.
Yeah, I open it up. I pull the little taste packet out that you yep. shouldn't eat, right? I've eaten a couple of them, but I pour the meal in. I pour the meal in, and then depending on where I'm going, the kind of hunt, so if it's like right. super cold, I supplement the meals. So what I mean by that is when I go out and it's really cold, I'll squirt olive oil in there already. So I'm adding calories. I'm adding mm-hmm. fat.
Mm-hmm.
I'll add beef jerky or something like that. So I'll add protein. Sometimes I add like a dried cheese, mm-hmm. right? Again, more fat.
Right.
So I'm trying to pack more nutritional calories in. So, you know, say an average Mountain House is 400 calories. I don't know that to be true, but just generally speaking. And I can pump that up to like 6 or 650, but I've added the protein and the fat that I require based on my experience. And then I roll it up into a tiny little package, right? That's going to be, if I have four of those and four Mountain House, there's no comparison in the volume that one takes up vice the other. you get a little bit of weight savings, but more it's really calories. Not about the weight savings, but I got a lot more calories in a smaller package. And then not to be crude, but one of the things I do, especially in inclement weather, is I keep that Ziploc, and one of them, all my trash goes into, anything that I haven't field stripped, because I do this with a lot of things. But the other one, I'll keep it in my tent. And instead of getting out of my tent to go to the bathroom at night, I pee in the Ziploc.
Oh, no problem.
Right? And
that.
I keep it in my vestibule. And then I go, pour it out the next day. Because if you're in grizzly country, I don't want to go wandering around in the middle of the night in the dark. Right. Or if it's raining or if it's snowing. I just get out of my bag. I roll over. I relieve myself. I put it in the vestibule. The next morning, I dump it out. I put it in the trash bag. So I find multiple uses for these things. But
I do that too.
But it's something that I learned over time, and it works for me. And you know, that's how I roll.
So what, you're just using a regular like gallon size Ziploc bag?
It depends. So some of my buddies will split them into two quart size. So they'll take one meal and break them into two quart size. So they'll eat. Let's say we roll into camp. The first thing they'll do is eat a meal, a quart, and then an hour later they'll eat the rest of it. I'm a guy that can roll with like one meal a day. That's just my physiology, right? Okay. So I roll in, I'll have water or go get water or have a hot drink, and then I'll eat one Mountain House. So I put mine in a gallon. Some people put them in quarts. And it's worked well for me, and I just feel that it has saved me a lot of volume. But more importantly, I can eat that one meal, and I get everything I need, you know.
John, thanks for dropping that knowledge bomb. I'm serious. People, that's just one clever. More thing I've never heard of. So
yeah, well, I've been on record other places saying, you know, if you don't like eating out of a bag, you probably picked the wrong line of work or hobby.
Wrong
right?
hobby,
like,
for sure.
Yeah.
This is just what we do.
Exactly.
We suffer for our hobby.
It's a what is it? It's a passion, I guess. It's labor of love.
It absolutely is.
Well, John, we really appreciate you coming on the show, and we'll hopefully have you on again next year.
Yeah, no, thanks. I really appreciate it. It was fun.
It was fun. And if you want to find John, you can go to sitkagear.com, and he wouldn't be hard to find.
It wouldn't be hard to find.
Thanks, John.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks.
Thanks for listening to the Avery Adventures podcast. If you like what you heard, please leave us a review on iTunes. I'd also like to point out that most all of our podcasts are on YouTube, and you can watch our ugly faces on video. So check it out. I'd appreciate it. Thank you. Thanks for listening to the Avery Adventures podcast. If you like what you heard, please leave us a review on iTunes. I'd also like to point out that most all of our podcasts are on YouTube, and you can watch our ugly faces on video. So check it out. I'd appreciate it. Thank you.